WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. A judge tells Justice Department lawyers she thinks the Supreme Court was quite clear in its decision, saying the Trump administration should facilitate the return of Kilmar Abrego-Garcia from El Salvador. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
She's getting down to business, and she's not going to allow any more games by the administration with regard to what, if anything, they have done to facilitate his return.
A CDC study finds another rise in autism among children. CBS's Alexander Tim.
Prevalence has climbed to 1 out of 31 kids in 2022. That's up from 1 in 36 kids from the last release through 2020.
CBS's Weijia Zhang says Harvard is bound to file a lawsuit after feds freeze billions of dollars in funding for refusing to change protest and DEI policies.
Harvard has made explicitly clear that it refuses to comply with what the administration is demanding of them, risking more than $2 billion worth of funding and grants.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
I'm Brittany Merlot with WXCO News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WXCO website at BullFallsRadio.com.
A bad night for the Brew Crew. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers' first night back at home, and they lose to the Tigers 9-1. Detroit was up 9-0 by the fifth inning. Pat Murphy says the Crew didn't lose like this last year.
Yeah, this is the fourth time we've been blown out in 17 games. We didn't get blown out four times in 162, I don't think. But this is the fourth time in 17 games, so that is concerning.
NBA, the Bucks getting ready for the playoffs. They face the Pacers Saturday at noon. Head coach Doc Rivers on how the team looks heading into that best of seven series.
I like some of the things we're doing. I actually think we need the week of practice. I really do. I think we can really hone in on some stuff that we want to do, especially with Giannis handling the ball more. There's some things we feel like we need to get better, and I think we can do that.
The Phoenix Suns have fired head coach Mike Budenholzer. After just one season, they finished with a disappointing record of 36-46. Budenholzer led the Bucks to an NBA championship in 2021. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one outstanding, just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio WXCO, home of the big high school sports show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Homegrowns, are you next? That's you, citizens. Are you next in Trump's giant caravan of illegal deportations? Are you going to be there? Because evidently, in his meeting with the El Salvadorian president, Trump said homegrowns are next. And what does that mean? What exactly does that mean? What does it mean that homegrowns are next? The president of this country, of the United States, on camera, proposed the idea of deporting American citizens to foreign countries to be prisoned. American citizens. Now, you get people who are okay with, you know, those illegals. But what happens if you get swept up and off to Guantanamo you go, or off to El Salvador, where evidently the president of that country is like, well, how am I going to return Kilmar Abrego-Garcia? How am I going to do that? Am I going to smuggle him? Of course I'm not going to. The question he said was preposterous on why they should return him. Because you know Trump put pressure on him. Because Trump can't be wrong. This administration can't admit that they've ever done something wrong, ever. And this should be, I don't care what color hat you're wearing today or if you're wearing a hat at all, if you're an American citizen, this has got to worry you. This has got to put some fear into the heart. Now, what it's meant to do is put fear in your heart so you'll back up. So you'll quiet down, you'll go away, you'll hide off. This should be, hey, Red Hats, we've learned from the Trump past that no one's loyal enough, that no one is pure enough, that no one is beyond being thrown under the bus, in the bus, out of the country. So are you going to be the next? Are you going to be the next Garcia? And the fact that he's saying you got to build five more of those concentration camp prisons, because we got homegrowns, we got people, and you know they got lists. And it came up today, someone asked me if I thought I was on the list. I said, I hope not. But you never know. You never know with this administration. You never know what they're going to do. And the reality is, every union member in this country should know Kilmer Abrego Garcia's name and should be getting their union on board with fighting, continuing to fight this. Because understand, this is a union brother. This is somebody who was in an apprenticeship program with the Sheet Metal Workers Union. Was literally building the country. Got swept up, gone. Illegally so. You have a Supreme Court, a 9-0 Supreme Court, saying, bring him home. And our president, the all-powerful, evidently, yeah, can't do this. And remember, all-powerful, always right, everyone fears him. Yeah, can't do this. Can't negotiate with the El Salvadorian president to bring this guy home. You believe that? The answer is no, you don't believe that. You know that Trump's behind this. And understand, it's not just people that they want to deport. It's people that they want to silence. And I've been saying for a very long time, my union brothers and sisters, you are on the list. Because we can't have empowered workers. We can't have empowered citizens in this country, because we might call BS when the most powerful president evidently says, oh, gee, nothing I can do. I turn to this Coalition for a Democratic Workplace. And who are they? They're an anti-union front group. Several hundred employers and employee associations. Yeah, like the Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Manufacturers, you know, all the horrible anti-worker folks, all into this Coalition for a Democratic Workplace. Really? That's such a nice name. And what are they trying to do? Well, they're trying to gut the NLRB. They're trying to have this administration and the courts overturn the National Labor Relations Board's decisions during the Biden years. Ultimately, what they're going to want to do is just completely gut the NLRA in the places that it helps workers. In the places where maybe it doesn't, well, we'll keep that. But this is another one of those moments where this administration, and look, we told you all during the campaign that they were going to be coming for what's left of the labor movement. They were going to be coming full tilt boogie on stripping collective bargaining rights, on taking your ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. They were coming. And this is part of that. These anti-worker front groups absolutely, positively, without question, understand that this is their moment, because they've got a president in Donald Trump who hates working people and clearly citizens who disagree with him. You know, the foundation of this country is debate and disagreement and being able to redress your government of grievances. But not in a Trump government, not in a Musk Trump government. I gotta ask, does this wake anyone up? The people who ran around, you know, crying that Hillary called them deplorables, or that Obama said that, you know, people cling to their guns, they lost their minds. I know people who have lost their minds, bought t-shirts, deplorable, clinging to my gun, got all of it. Will Donald Trump saying that there are homegrowns who are next And I don't know what that means. That could be union member because, you know, you're causing problems at work. You're standing up to that boss saying, hey, I want better wages, hours, conditions. I want to live. Does that rise to the level? Are we going to be Colombia where union members and union leaders are thrown out of planes or thrown out of the country? Is that where we're heading? I got to ask. And all of us now have to be prepared for the reality that that's what could come. I can't believe I cannot believe I'm saying those words, but this is where Trump has left us. This is what Trump has said on camera to the American people's face. And understand, the right-wing media, they're going to spin this. Well, you know, they're going to find any reason to say that this is the greatest ever. He's the greatest president ever. Dear Donald. Dear Donald. Dear leader. We got problems, folks. And it's in the Oval Office. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interesting evening of emails after yesterday's program talking about tariffs and Emily de la Bruyere saying, hey, I want 900% tariffs on China. And look, I'm not entirely opposed to it. So a lot of folks sending me this Mark Cuban tweet, I'm assuming trying to call me a hypocrite, but Cuban tweeted out, I don't care who you are. If you are complaining, we need tariffs to bring manufacturing and jobs to the U.S. and you don't buy American exclusively, you are a hypocrite in all capital letters. You want to bring manufacturing back, lead by example and get friends and family to do the same. Clearly, Mark Cuban hasn't been to a Home Depot lately. Because there are nothing on the shelves to buy. So come on, Mark, get on board. But here to share some thoughts on this idea of, you know, hey, if we had the option, would we buy? I've asked my good friend Lori Wallach to come share some thoughts. She's the director of Rethink Trade. You can check out their website at rethinktrade.org. Lori, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for inviting me back.
So what do you make of this Cuban statement? I mean, this is one of those things that, you know, you're going to throw out there to try and make people like you, me, who support the use of tariffs, maybe not the way this guy's doing it, but support it. What do you make of this comment?
You know, it's really hypocritical because he was the guy running around the campaign, basically bashing tariffs and calling every tariff of any stripe a sales tax and a horrible thing. So, you know, after sort of contributing to, a certain amount of damage to the future of American-made goods, he then, you know, is now clearly unaware that having lost 90,000 factories since NAFTA, China entered the WTO, et cetera, we don't make a lot of anything here anymore. And we actually do need policies to be able to do it. So either saying, oh, you just have to buy American, whether it's available, or saying, like, there's some magic wand, it might be a one-off tariff. None of those things bring back the manufacturing, bring back the jobs, bring back our ability to make stuff. But we sure as hell need to do that very thing. And there are ways to do it.
Yeah.
We are not stuck in the screwed position that we're in. But we, you know, we're not helped by those kind of one-off comments.
No, and for me, look, I would love to have that choice. In fact, I was told we were going to have that choice. There would be a competition and the market would decide. And look, you know, when the Chinese Communist government is subsidizing U.S. companies to move over there or just flat out buying up U.S. companies and boxing up the factories and sending them over there, that competition really didn't happen. And we as consumers don't have the option in most cases of buying an American-made product. And I look at a company like Amazon. Amazon could be really helpful by putting on there where this stuff is sourced, where you could click on, hey, I want to buy American-made products. They have the technology to do it. They just won't do it because it's not there as much.
And it's more profitable for them to buy stuff made with Uyghur forced labor and hope that the customs department doesn't realize that's banned and can't come into the country and sell it for a big markup. I mean, the reality is that at this point, there are 17 countries around the world that have chronic, very large trade surpluses. That means they sell a lot more stuff to other countries than they import from the other countries. And they get that way because they use a bunch of what are sometimes called beggar thy neighbor. So just taking care of yourself, screwing the neighbor kind of policies. And some of it is certainly subsidies, but they do stuff like suppress wages. So the China's, the Vietnam's, you know, authoritarian government just says, this is what you're getting paid. Other countries, you know, bust independent unions, or they suppress consumption. The German tax system, wages are higher than here, but the tax system is such that people have a lower standard of living as far as the things that they buy. They're basically subsidizing their manufacturing and export powerhouse on the backs of their working class consumers, or currency manipulation, or all of the above put together. And you end up with these, you know, a lot of people call them mercantilist countries, sticking their goods way more than the world needs into every other market, flattening even the most productive, strategic, genius product, because the price is so artificially low, you can't possibly compete. It just squashes everyone.
Right.
Then you have the United States with the biggest trade deficit in the history of the world. A trade deficit that started in 1975 has gotten bigger and bigger. But at this point, there's 66 other countries that have chronic trade deficits. And I'm talking with the world. You know, President Trump's obsessed with these bilateral trade deficits. There are two of those that matter. Vietnam and Mexico, they matter because they're ginormous. But generally, the thing that matters is the balance with the world. And there are now 66 countries that are in the same different dimension of it, but heading in the same direction we are. You get deindustrialized. That's like a prediction of economic theory. Big, long trade deficit, you get deindustrialized. Your factories go away. We've lost 90,000 of them, and you have more income inequality. So here's like something I'll blow most people's minds. The BRICS, which is the initials of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. It's like the formation of the biggest middle-income countries, the big powerhouses. All of the BRICS, except for the C, China, now have global trade deficits. And every single one of those other countries has tariffs up against China too, just like us. And so when you see that kind of imbalance, you both see we've got a huge honking mess, but you kind of can see a path to how you could fix it, getting everyone together against the cheaters.
Which I'm all in favor of, but we have a guy who doesn't seem to be getting that. And these across-the-board tariffs on people who we should be reaching out to. And do you think, because I saw a story today that said, you know, in the administration saying there are big deals that are coming. You know, some countries are going to, they're going to be okay and we're going to do these big deals. Do you think that's part of this? Do you think this is the deal-making that eventually we're going to all wake up to the reality, what I think we already know, and that it's China. China's the one that we have to, you know, globally come around to pulling back into line, or is this just, you know, the kind of slapdashery that I expect from this administration?
You know, it's been kind of a heartbreaking spectacle, actually, because the use of tariffs by this administration this time around has been so incoherent and so unprofessional. And tariffs are part of the solution. There are going to have to be tariffs to stop the flood of imports from these countries that cheat. China's by far the worst. But they're not alone. I mean, honestly, Germany has a huge chronic surplus and they're squashing the rest of Europe. But also, the whole world has trade deficits with Germany. It's also Korea and it's Japan and it's Taiwan. I mean, these are sizable, not just with the US, but the whole world. So if we had a system of using the tariff smartly to deal with, on the defense, the kind of imports you just can't possibly compete with, and you added to that the whole rest of the set of packages, policy package, you need to actually get in the space you create with the tariffs, the investment in more factories, the demand to make it worth investing in the factories for domestic goods. And you do that by things like the stuff Biden did. You do a tax credit that's better and bigger if you get Made in America EV car or Made in America solar panel or Made in America heat pump. And you get a tax credit for as an investor for X number of years if you invest in a new factory. And you get an even better deal if it's a union upfront deal with, like, before you even start. And you get an even better deal if you agree to do X, Y, and Z percentage of American-made inputs. And you create all these incentives using, you have the procurement system. So you have Stronger by America. And you create government demand for the American-made goods. And you put all of that together. You figure out the things you really need to bring home. Because obviously we're not going to make everything.
Right.
You want to make the stuff you need for national security, for national resilience. Like, we all live through COVID. Like, as someone, you know, who has some sense growing up in Wausau, Wisconsin, what people used to make across the Midwest, I have a sense of, like, of course we can't get blah, blah during COVID because we don't make it anymore because I saw that factory close. But a lot of people on the coasts, they're like, wait, what do you mean we can't get blah, blah? I always find blah, blah at the store. And for them, it was like a come to Jesus moment where they're like, holy beans, we don't make anything anymore. And oh my goodness, we don't really have very diverse sources of imports. So it's all coming from one or two places, medicine, communications equipment, computers, transportation equipment, energy equipment. And all of a sudden everyone realized, like, well, that's a bad idea. We need some redundancy. We need some resilience. And so in the face of all of that, you have the whole country ready to go a different way. And then you've just had a total tariff malpractice of hitting allies, hitting basically countries that aren't really the problem, not phasing it in. So yeah, China needs great big honking tariffs eventually. But until you have in companies that are now hooked on the supply chain of those Chinese goods, unless you know either you're a year and a half down the road and a U.S. company is now making that thing that goes into the thing that you're going to manufacture, or someplace in Europe or in Latin America or some the hell other place that's not got the huge honking tariffs. But if you go from zero to 60 on China and all of a sudden you don't have a supply chain for manufacturing, that undermines your efforts to be more sustainable in our own manufacturing. So this just wasn't it has not been a well thought out plan, to put it mildly. And so we've seen all these downsides we didn't have to have. All the hell in the stock market, everyone having a, you know, watching their union pensions go into the tank. I mean, that was not necessary if this had been done in a less chaotic way.
Yeah, I remember years ago when I was in college, you know, there was a discussion about the trade deficits and how, you know, you could have leveled it out, and how back during the Bretton Woods Accord back in, I think, 1944, that happened, where they, you know, they were figuring out how to divvy up the world. And there was an idea floated at the time of having a universal currency, not the dollar, but that, you know, countries that had surpluses would pay an enormous tax and they would redistribute that to countries who were the deficits. And there would be a leveling kind of through this basket of currencies. It looks like the dollar is maybe in trouble of being the global currency. And I know some people think it's a good idea to have it. Some people are on the other side. But as the BRIC countries are trying to develop their own, do you see that in any way of being a leveler, or any thoughts?
Yep. So, you know, for folks to sort of know what Professor Rick is saying, basically, there's always one currency in the world, typically one, sometimes a few, that are considered the clearing currency. And that is basically what trade's conducted in. Most of trade's conducted in dollars, or gets converted to dollars. And so the dollar isn't just our currency. It's this currency that other countries hold on to as the reserve. So, you know, for your country to be economically secure, you want reserves of a certain amount of hard currency, the dollar. And sometimes it's treasury bills, sometimes it's cash. But the result of that means that we're not just normally having a currency that floats. Like if you have a huge honking trade deficit, the value of your currency declines. That clears the market. Even with all those mercantile activities of the cheating countries, your currency would go down. The dollar never goes down. The dollar's way overvalued. And what that means is it's much cheaper for folks to send their goods here, because when you take our high dollar to their low currency, it makes it a bargain to have their stuff come into our market. It makes it too expensive for us to export. Our dollar makes stuff much more expensive. And the reason why it stays high instead of actually settling the way the market would normally do if we had this huge deficit is because all these other countries can control the value of the dollar. Some would do it intentionally. China holds 4 or 5 times as much reserve as it needs actually for its what's called balance of payments to make sure its economy can clear. They're doing that to keep the value of the dollar up for basically manipulation purposes. Other countries hold, you know, a lot of reserve because they have to have X amount of balance of payment security. So we have this problem that Rick just described, where if the whole world weren't using our dollars, we would be less likely to have as big of a trade deficit. And the one of the ways to fix that is actually an idea that Senator Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin, and interestingly, Senator Hawley, very conservative Republican from Missouri, put into Congress in the previous Congress. And it would basically have a surcharge on foreign investment coming back in. So like when we sell $1 billion of stuff, now the Chinese or whomever we bought the stuff from have the dollars. And then they want to reinvest it back into the stock market, into luxury real estate, into whatever. That's the technical, that's the practical way of the technical saying of the return comes to capital, not to wages. And so they're like, they're not paying higher wages or building factories. Right. They're putting their money into some, you know, basically financial investment. So if we made it less appealing to come and have that financial investment by, for instance, putting a surcharge on foreign investment coming in for that kind of investment, not like investment in factory, but stock market, luxury real estate, etc. That could be a very interesting way to actually help bring down the value of the dollar in a way that doesn't crash the dollar.
Right. So what I'm trying to get to is, look, you and I have had conversations before. I said from the very beginning, I think Trump is going to booger up the idea of using tariffs for the future. He's going to bungle this so badly that no one's going to, it's going to be toxic to even bring up the word. Even though right now the word tariff still is fairly popular among especially my Midwestern working class folks. But I fear he's going to do this so badly we never use this tool again. And I'm trying to figure out how Democrats pick this up and go, hey, we've got a vision. We've got a way. Or even Republicans, somebody who's sane, get me someone rational to use this tool in the right way instead of as a bludgeon. Because, look, I think this trade war, I don't think anybody really wins with the way Trump is leveling this. I could be wrong, and I hope I am, but I just don't see it that way.
I think there's a risk there. I think there's a risk there that the way he's bungled this is going to give tariff a bad name, even though it's just a neutral tool. And you can use it like a genius, or you can use it like a fool. And he is not doing it in a very thoughtful or coordinated way, is the politic way I would put it. It is, you know, it is really horrible to watch. Every single day they're changing something, they're realizing they dropped some ball. And you know, when you mention all these deals they're making, it scares the hell out of me that they're making deals behind closed doors. For whom? In whose interest?
Exactly.
I mean, the thing, Rick, that scares me is we could have the worst of all worlds. We could have a deal where we got, excuse my language, but the show in the markets that was not necessary, and then it brings down the markets. Then you have a situation where we maybe don't get any investment or any return on manufacturing because it's so unsteady. It's so unpredictable that, as you said, what investor decides to take the risk that the tariffs are going to be there the next day and actually invest in a new factory here, relying on something that who the hell knows? And then if all of that weren't bad enough, they could be making special interest deals where, you know, they're like, let's kill some privacy and antitrust laws to help the big tech be even more rotten around the world. And, you know, let's make the Europeans eat a bunch of unhealthy food that they don't want to eat. And, oh, yeah, let's, like, have Eric Trump get a new golf course someplace in, I don't know, Bali. That kind of stuff could be going on. And if they're not public about it, like, we literally could have the triple whammy.
No, I fully expect all of that. All of it. But we'll see where this takes us, because in the coming days, they say they're going to be some great deals. So we'll have more to talk about and more to wade through. But Lori, I appreciate the work you guys do over there at Rethink Trade. Oh, folks, will take a look at the website, rethinktrade.org. Appreciate the time, as always, and can't wait to have you back.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Lori Wallach. Want to hear your thoughts. I know, got a lot of emails from people saying, you're being too nice to Trump. I don't think so. I think that the blind squirrel has found the nut. It's just whether he's going to, well, we'll figure it out. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Keep it up. Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Right back.
Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and cool tonight with lows in the mid-20s. More sunshine than clouds for Wednesday. Warmer with a high in the mid-50s. Some showers and storms Thursday. And becoming breezy. High temperatures well into the 60s.
Currently 35 degrees.
Nothing you could say could tear me away from my dog. My dog is Shadow, y'all. Hi, I'm Smokey Robinson. When you adopt a shelter pet, you not only bring joy and love into your home, you also give another animal the chance to experience that special bond. Join me in supporting American Humane Society and their incredible work to help our most vulnerable friends. Together, we can make a real difference. Donate today at AmericanHumane.org.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I said, look, you got Xi Jinping going around on a tour of Vietnam, Malaysia, and Cambodia. And you think he's there to, you know, say, hey, you know, aren't you glad that those tariffs are coming? No, he's strengthening ties with the countries that are export-based. And look, you know, at the end of this, I think Trump is going to screw this up badly, as he did in the first term, allowing China to fill a lot of voids that his ignorance left available. A lot of minerals we could have taken advantage of that, because he was absent, allowed China to take over. But here to share some thoughts on, well, what this could look like if it's bungled, and where maybe Democrats should be picking this up. That's why I've asked my good friend Rich Ojeda to come share some thoughts. He is our go-to military voice, congressional candidate, and host of Ojeda Live, a nightly hit right at 8:30 p.m. on Facebook and YouTube. Rich, thanks for taking time for us.
I always enjoy being on your show. I think you have the best intro in the business, my brother. I really believe that, man. Love the music, man. Good. But, you know, what you was talking about, I automatically think about USAID. If we are not in these countries doing things like helping them to be able to have clean water, to help them fight the diseases that we can, you know, get rid of with vaccinations, China will be. And that's the thing, is what they've done is they've killed USAID. And this is opening the door for China to walk in and absolutely do what they have to do to strengthen, you know, China. And that's exactly what's going to happen. This is not something that was, I wouldn't say well thought out, but I disagree with it completely.
No, and for me, it's one of these things where you go, you know, during Trump's first term, you know, China went and had this Belt and Road Initiative that, you know, went through Africa and, you know, made agreements there that kind of froze us out. There's a lot of mineral things. There's just a lot of things that, by being isolationists, and I say this all the time, I'm a protectionist. I'm not an isolationist. When I leave my house, I lock the door. I don't have a giant moat around it. We have to be playing in the international world. I just think he's doing this poorly. And again, I think we're going to be on the losing end of it.
I think that he doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, and here's the dangerous part is it's not that he just doesn't know what he's doing, but he has now put together an administration of people that don't know what they're doing. I mean, you know, case in point, the signal gate, you know, communicating on a signal app, you know, war plans. I mean, I would say that there are some people, Pete Hegseth shouldn't have done that. Neither should have Tulsi Gabbard. But, I mean, goodness gracious, these are not people that know what they're doing.
Yeah, but Rich, they weren't war plans. Didn't you hear Pete Hegseth say that? There were no war plans.
Well, I disagree on that one for sure. I mean, if you're talking about hit times, you're talking about the types of weapons that we're using, absolutely war plans. And we have to be lucky that somebody wasn't able to get that information because the Houthis could have easily had their air defense artillery shooting everything out of the sky in a 30-minute window, and it would have absolutely taken the lives of American pilots, and that's unacceptable. And it is really, really sad that we've got Americans that are that cavalier with the safety of our military.
Let me ask you this, because, you know, one of the things that my red hat friends love to say is, you know, Donald Trump didn't start a war, and neither did Joe Biden. You're looking at what's going on, as you pointed out here. You look at what's going on with this trade war, which could easily, you know, escalate into a situation where China takes Taiwan. Then what do we do? It could escalate even beyond that as you're dividing the world up. Well, I think what he's doing is making the world a very dangerous place. Look, I think you have to do something. I just think what he's doing is not in the realm of good.
Well, I mean, the people that are going to get hurt the worst, I believe, are the Trump supporters. I mean, you know, with Elon Musk trying to tank capabilities and Donald Trump trying to tariff everybody in the world, I mean, everybody is turning against us. And there's ways that other countries can fight against us without having to squeeze triggers. It's like, you know, Canada is no longer sending people down here to vacation in the United States of America. It's going to be hitting people in the pocket. And that's what it's going to do. And a lot of people in America are the ones that are going to pay for this the worst. You know, Donald Trump's going to play golf no matter what, but it's going to hurt a lot of people.
Yeah. So as a Democrat running for office, you know, because I keep saying, you know, this is an opportunity. There's a window here for Democrats to come flying through if they figure out how to message around. Yeah, we do need to use tariffs, but not as a bludgeon, as a strategic tool. There is a way for Democrats, I think, to take this and move it forward. So when you're out talking to people, rallies, all of that, what responses are you getting, and what direction do you think Democrats should be moving?
Look, Democrats are going to have to fight. And I will tell you right now, we have a Supreme Court justice race in North Carolina that was won by a Democrat. And 5 months later, they're still trying to steal that race from her. They're trying to throw out 5,500 votes that basically are from overseas, from service members. So Republicans can talk about how much they love that veteran, but you don't want that veteran's voice, because that's exactly what they're doing. And this is going to end up being, you know, their play for whenever they lose an election. They're just going to refuse that they lost, and they're going to fight it in the courts, and that's what's going to happen. And the Democrats have to be ready to, you know, dig in and get ready for the long fight, because that's what these sore losing Republicans are going to do.
Because there is an opportunity here, I think, for Democrats to come forward and say, look, we, you know, we've had bad trade deals, we've had bad policy. There is a way forward. The weird thing is Democrats have allowed themselves to be saddled with the responsibility of things like NAFTA and GATT and the WTO and all of the permanent normal trade relations and all of the bad policies that were birthed during the Reagan years and fully negotiated during the H.W. Bush years and Republicans majorities supported. But it's the Democrats who allowed themselves to get saddled with it.
Well, look, Democrats need to start daggone fighting. That's just the way that it is, because make no mistake about it. They are going, you know, we can come back and we can win back the House, but will they leave? Will the Republicans leave? I mean, look, the Supreme Court just voted 9-0 that Donald Trump had to retrieve the guy who was sent to El Salvador. And they basically said, no, no. The Supreme Court, 9-0, and they literally said, we don't care what you have to say. The Republican people in power are all a bunch of criminals. and they don't care. They're not going to follow the rules. You know, once again, they don't care that they gave war plans over a Signal app because they don't care. Nobody's going to hold them accountable. Donald Trump's not going to hold them accountable. And that's where we're at. And the Democrats need to be ready for this fight, because this fight isn't going to be it's not going to be won in a day.
Right.
We're going to end up fighting for the next 2 years and probably after that. You know, as long as Donald Trump is in power, we have to be really, we have to be ready to fight these battles.
Since you brought up Kilmer Abrego Garcia, he is the smart union apprentice who was snatched up and sent to El Salvador. You had Trump meeting with the El Salvadorian president, who evidently is claiming he's not going to allow this guy to be deported. So no matter what our courts say, and you know, Donald Trump, you know, I tried, they're just not going to allow it to happen. What position does that put us in?
I think he's dead. I think that they know that they can't retrieve him, because Donald Trump and them are sending people to a death camp. And I believe that that's what they're doing. And sadly, I mean, at the end of the day, it wouldn't be hard at all to say, bring him back. But they're not going to. And the reason why they're not going to is because they don't want the American people to know that he's probably dead. And I'm not just trying to scare people. I'm sitting here telling you that, you know, with your, when you're going to send people to a gulag and give them no due process, that's un-American. And once again, oh, well, this person wasn't an American citizen. You know, are we really going to hate on people that want to come to America so they can have a better life for their children? Because that's exactly what we're doing right now.
Well, I mean,
it's absolutely unacceptable.
Everybody says this guy was wrongly deported. You know, and I know this administration refuses to admit mistakes, because of what they do is always the best and the best ever, and no one's ever seen better than this. But, you know, how much of this do you think is just the willingness to go, I don't care about people, I'm not going to admit a mistake? Or is this, you know, just we don't care at all, mistake, nothing, we're just sending people out, given the fact that during the meeting with the El Salvadorian president, Trump said, you know, build more prisons because we're going to get rid of some homegrowns. That could be you, could be me.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's what they want to do. And make no mistake about it. You know, it's like, you know, when they came for the Jews, I said nothing because I wasn't Jewish, you know. And then it gets down to when they came for me, there was nobody to help defend me.
Yeah.
That's the path that we are on. These people are criminals. The whole entire administration should be held accountable when all this is done. This isn't going to last forever. We may have some serious problems in our country. People are going to be hurt, but there is going to come a day when people start waking up. And when that happens, these people that are doing these things must be held accountable. And oh, by the way, you want to play those games? Well, they can be sent to El Salvador too.
But this is, I brought this up for a reason, because, you know, to highlight your Pastor Niemöller quote, you know, first they came for the trade unionists, and I said nothing. I hear me, a trade unionist, and then the Jews, and this, every group. But eventually they got to everyone, and this is where I'm going, hey, Red Hats, this could be you. This guy, this Garcia, a union apprentice, actually building this country, just swept up and sent away with a court system that has said bring him back, and an administration who is defying our court system.
So where's the unions? Why is the unions not marching in the street for this union worker?
Well, they are. Because look, they're doing, I got to be honest, I'm actually quite impressed by what the labor unions, the building trades especially, are doing to try and get this guy back. There have been marches in the streets. There have been numerous court battles. It's just not getting through to the mainstream, through our mainstream corporate-controlled media. Because everyone's afraid of Trump.
Then maybe everybody needs to do it in Washington, D.C. You know, maybe that's what needs to happen. I mean, this is absolutely unacceptable. And it, you know, if you can't admit when you're wrong, you don't want to admit that you are wrong, and you're willing to allow a man who is a father of, I believe, three children to just disappear and never, ever come back because you don't want to admit that you made a mistake. I mean, this is the worst thing that could ever happen. This I can only begin to imagine about his family and how they feel.
And it could be any one of us, given the fact that, and look, I think Trump's comment about, you know, build more prisons, we're going to go after homegrowns. It could be any one of us. And what I think is most important. This could be any one of us who are just unlucky enough to be in a place where they decided to do a raid and sweeped up, you know, with everybody else, kettled into a van or into a bus or on a plane. This is bad stuff. This is constitutional crisis stuff.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And that's why, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, Donald Trump, I could see him trying to act like he's the hero, bringing him back, you know, having him in the Oval Office saying, here he is, everybody. He's going back home to his family. But he can't. But
and he won't. And he won't.
I don't think that it's he won't. I think that he can't. I think that that window has passed. I really believe that this guy's probably no longer with us.
I sure hope not. I mean,
I hope I'm wrong, but you know, nothing would surprise me with the Trump administration.
I mean, this is one of the worst places on earth, and look, you know, a lot of people don't make it through these places, and look, but this is where we are, and this should be a wake up call. Because we predicted this, Rich. You know, we and I had a conversation before Trump took office talking about when these sweeps happen, there are going to be, you know, innocent people swept up in this, and how will they respond? We're now seeing it. I got to get your thought before I let you go on Trump's rewriting of the Ukraine war. He put on Truth Social yesterday, I believe it was, that President Zelensky and crooked Joe Biden did an absolutely horrible job in allowing this travesty to begin. I'm sorry. Did Biden and Zelensky encourage this? Did they allow this? Did they allow Putin to invade? Did I miss something?
No. You know, we all saw the world begged Vladimir Putin to not invade the sovereign nation of Ukraine, and he did it anyway. And of course, he thought that he was going to take Kyiv in 3 days, and then he thought that they were immediately going to go into Moldova. Donald Trump is just trying to just rewrite, you know, just in his own version, and it's wrong. You know, Ukraine was invaded, and I will tell you, I get a list every day of the losses, and I am so glad that even though Donald Trump has cut all ties with Ukraine for his good buddy Vladimir Putin, and that's exactly why he did it, the Ukrainian people are still getting the support that they need from other countries across the world. And they're still kicking Russia's butt. And you know what? I hope it continues until Russia realizes that they've lost this war. And hopefully the people in Russia are going to wake up and realize that Vladimir Putin has sent an entire generation to their deaths. And then Russia will deal with him accordingly. But Donald Trump trying to act as if, you know, that's Donald Trump. He's going to blame everything on Joe Biden. Donald Trump was given the greatest economy in the world and 70 days it took for him to destroy it. And now he's saying, well, I was handed a horrible economy. Everybody who has anything between their ears knows that that is a lie. Donald Trump does nothing but spew garbage and lies, and he's just going to continue doing that.
Ukraine
was an innocent country that was invaded.
And, you know, the thing is about, you know, what you said about Trump and the economy. I was wrong, and I'll admit it. I thought Trump would come in day one, say, look what we've done. It's the greatest economy. It's the Trump economy. And he didn't have to do anything. We were on a decent track. We were on a good track. Jobs are going to be created not because of Trump, but because of the policies of the Biden administration until Trump undoes that. You know, he could have done nothing. And yet now we're talking, you know, major banking institutions and major, you know, players on Wall Street are going, plan for recession.
Yeah, but don't worry. The billionaires will be fine.
The billionaires will be fine. Last question I've got for you. I know you're out on the campaign trail. I know you're out there doing the handshaking, kissing babies, and all of that stuff. What's the message you're getting from people when you're out doing that stuff? And the other side of this, how can people find out more about the Richo Jetta campaign?
Well, you know, first off, they can go to ojettafornc.com. And check us out. Our website is being built, but you can still go there and check it out. People are just pissed, you know, people. And I'm telling you, you know, we had a Where is Richard Hudson town hall. And I'm going to tell you, I had independent voters. I had Republicans come up to me and say, we're tired of this garbage. You know, people are getting tired. People are realizing that we are on a horrible path, and Democrats need to show out. And that's exactly what needs to happen. We can't just beat these people. We got to beat them with a huge, huge margin. You know, they have to know that what they're doing right now is very unpopular. And we have to capitalize on that. That's why, you know, I'm running this race way early. But I want to make sure that I go to every location, shake every hand, meet every person. I want to know when they send me to Washington, D.C., exactly what it is I'm supposed to do when I get there.
There you go. So
that's what I'm doing, and I'm not going to stop until Election Day.
Need more Rich Ojeda's in Congress. We need more people in every congressional district that a Republican sits in to find a Rich Ojeda to get out there with the passion and then the knowledge and the caring of my good buddy. Rich, I appreciate you taking time off the campaign and coming to talk with us. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, Rick.
Rich Ojeda, I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1916. That was the day that the American Federation of Teachers was founded at a meeting at the City Club in downtown Chicago. Three Chicago teachers groups helped to organize the meeting. They were convinced that in order to improve working conditions for teachers, they would need to formally join the labor movement. In 1902, the Chicago Teachers Federation had become the first teachers organization in the nation to join their Central Labor Council. Now they believed it was time to form a national organization. The meeting was also attended by representatives from nearby Gary, Indiana, as well as New York City, Washington, D.C., and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Just a few weeks after the meeting, the American Federation of Teachers had received its charter from the American Federation of Labor. The new union grew quickly. Within 4 months, 174 locals approached membership of 10,000 educators. But then came a backlash from school boards who did not want to negotiate with the new unions. Board members publicly called into question whether it was appropriate for teachers to unionize. The American Federation of Teachers' numbers fell to below 5,000. But the union was not swayed from their cause. They renewed their efforts and again began to grow. In the 1950s, some teachers became the targets of anti-communist hysteria. This highlighted the importance of having a union to protect academic freedom. The 1960s was a time of increased teacher actions and strikes. The American Federation of Teachers more than tripled its membership from 60,000 to 200,000 by the end of the decade. Today, the American Federation of Teachers represents more than 1 million members across the nation. While under increasing attacks, teachers are an important force in today's national labor movement.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, I go back to this sheet metal worker, Garcia, who, again, the Trump administration, even though the Supreme Court 9-0 said bring him home, not. And the El Salvadorian president saying, well, what do you want me to do about it? I'm just president. I don't know. This is where Americans need to step up. This is where Americans need to know Kilmer Abrego Garcia's name. And in his name, boycott anything that comes into this country from El Salvador. Be it apparel, you know, your Hanes, your Fruit of the Loom underwear, any sugar products or any confectionery products, coffee, electrical equipment, any of that stuff, cereal, milk preparation stuff, any of that, stone, plaster, cement, all of it, any beverages, look what Canada did, every bit of liquor off the shelves. This is what Americans need to do to say, okay, well, you know, the Trump administration is going to walk away. This is what American working class people need to step up and do. That's where I'm at. Because understand, this administration isn't going to listen to anyone. And I've been following this case with the AP. And the Associated Press has been barred from covering the Oval Office in events that Trump is involved in. Especially this one with the El Salvadorian president. Even though the court has said, you can't do that. And Trump is defying a court injunction because they believe they're above the law. And look what they're doing to these law firms. They're strong-arming these law firms into, hey, we want you to be our attack dogs. And they're sadly cowering. Same thing with some of our higher institutions of higher education. Shocking to me that Columbia University is caving. But interestingly enough, Harvard is saying, no. Even though the Trump administration has froze $2.2 billion in funding to the university, they're saying no. Their president said no government, regardless of which party is in power, should dictate what private universities can teach, whom they can admit and hire, and which areas of study and inquiry they can pursue. That kind of is the foundation of what this country is about. They have passed no laws, nothing yet, that would make what they're going after federal law. But Harvard is saying, no, we're not gonna do this. We're not going to give up our rights. And that's the part that I think is really important in all of this, is that they're saying, look, you know, we're just not gonna do it. Originally the response was, well, they're refused to work with the Trump administration. And they're saying, no, look, you know, it's not that. We're just not gonna give up our sovereignty. We're not gonna give up what this country stands for. And this is where, again, you gotta ask yourself, in this moment, is this the administration that you voted for? Is this what you voted for? And the answer is, I hope not. I sure hope not. But again, you're seeing some bits of protest. Cornell is suing the Trump administration over what they're calling unlawful cuts because it was passed by Congress. But again, this administration, there are no rules, there are no laws, there's none of that they're going to obey. And I come back to where we started. I come back to that comment of the homegrowns are next. Now here's the weird thing. They've deported some. I was told millions. I was told there were going to be 11 million people deported. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of bus trips. That's a lot of plane trips. That's a lot of prisons to be built. The fact that he chose to say homegrowns are next when not finishing what he's claimed he was going to do tells you that he knows he was never going to do what he said he was going to do. He's going to do what they always do, claim victory, say he's done what nobody else thought possible. Nobody thought he could do it. You know, they're all impressed. They're all amazed. You've heard this, the comments. You've heard his verbal tics. The question is, what are we going to do? This situation with this Kelmar Abrego Garcia, this sheet metal worker, this is a big deal. And you go, well, it's only one person. Yeah, that one person could be you. How do you want your country to respond in the event that this happens to you? How do you want your country to respond? How do you want your fellow citizens to respond if they come for you? If you are the homegrown, who's next? This is that. It's not about red hats and blue hats. Not about who you voted for in the last election. Not about Democrats, Republicans. Not about any of that. It's about your right to be in this country. And can they throw U.S. citizens out of here for whatever reason they want? Just label you a terrorist. You disagreed with us. You wanted better wages, hours, conditions. You fought the boss too hard. Think about where this could take us and how bad it could get. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Am I being hyperbolic? Am I taking this too far? I want to hear it, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program? grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. The autism rate rises to 3% of children in a CDC study. CBS's Alexander Tin.
The CDC study tracking rates of autism in 16 communities around the country now estimates that prevalence has climbed to 1 out of 31 kids in 2022. That's up from 1 in 36 kids from the last release through 2020. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has described the new data as an alarming increase in the autism epidemic. That's different from Kennedy's own health officials and outside experts, who say that the new results may simply reflect ongoing improvements in screening for autism.
President Trump is now threatening to remove Harvard's tax-exempt status. It comes after the Trump administration froze over $2 billion in grants and contracts because the school refused demands for DEI and protest changes. White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt.
All the president is asking, don't break federal law, and then you can have your federal funding.